Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, Monaco Grand Prix edition. I've been looking forward to this one for quite some time, purely because of the heated discussions that we usually have. I'm Matt.
I'm Jess.
I'm Tommy.
And we are going to have some fun today, aren't we?
I don't know who's going to have the most fun.
Should be interesting.
Did you hear that smug little...
I bet you just pray the day before, like, please be good, please be a good please race, be good. Please be a good race, just to stick
well,
it to
Well, to be fair, you might be surprised.
Okay. Oh. But before we dive into the Monaco Grand Prix, let's do a quick three-word race review, which was the most liked on our Instagram. And that was from George_Giannis_, for Niki Lauda. Obviously very sad news, the passing of one of the greats, not only in motorsport, but, you know, in aviation. You know, he did so many things.
Yeah.
It was in terms of respect and the amount of posts I saw about Niki Lauda, it was unbelievable. Like, everywhere I looked, there was something, a word of respect from someone.
Mm-hmm. Shows what an icon he was, that, like, every team ran stuff, like... Both Hamilton and Vettel had, you know, Lauda tribute helmets. There was loads, wasn't there, at the weekend, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, and I really liked the red hats and, you know, the kind of just... The whole paddock was... I don't know, it was strange. Because obviously we had Charlie Whiting not too long ago, and that was like a huge wave of sadness. Then we had Niki Lauda, who, you know, he kind of defied death, didn't he?
In
a lot of ways. And for him to have made 70 was a miracle in itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think, I was trying to find the right way to word it as well, but it's not like, it's obviously really sad, but like, what a life he lived. And to get to 70 after the crash he had, and what I really liked about the tributes and stuff, it was more like a celebration of him as a person, like the red hats. And I loved on the grid that Toto Wolff said that Niki would be watching this going, "You all look stupid."
That was just part of his personality though, wasn't it? It was that kind of straight talking, no nonsense stuff that F1 really needs, because there's a lot of like spin and people
just
kind
crap.
Of yeah, yeah exactly yeah.
I saw a great comment that was like, instead of the minute of silence, they should have had a minute of like honest chat. Like everyone can
no
just
bullshit.
Say what they want for a minute.
Yeah.
And
without
he
consequences.
Did. He was very honest, and you know, you kind of got an insight into the workings of Mercedes, at least when things went wrong. You know, he'd just be like, "Well, he was at fault." You know, and it was brilliant to see. Right, let's move on to the race now, the Monaco Grand Prix. Tommy, let's start with your three-word race review.
That was Monaco.
Oh, here we go.
I thought you'd have that reaction.
For audio listeners, we all just eye-rolled.
Yeah, I thought you'd have that reaction. It's funny, actually, because I messaged Jack Aitken. Obviously, if you're new to our podcast, last time we did Monaco, it was very much me and Jack versus you two of, we like Monaco, we hate Monaco. We're in the like Monaco camp, and you guys were hate Monaco.
I wasn't hate, I think Jess was hate, I was kind of dislike.
But for me, that race was everything Monaco should be. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that there was loads of overtaking and, you know, it was a crazy, like, the greatest race ever.
It wasn't
ever.
A classic, no.
But I'd argue it was a classic. Like, I think that race will be remembered because of the drama, because of Hamilton's drive, because of Verstappen, a bit like Mansell and Senna in 92. It was kind of that kind of vibe. But for me, that was like the perfect Monaco race where you've got strategy, like people are on different strategies. There was a bit of overtaking as well, which I thought was great. Like Leclerc, obviously he had the perils of Monaco where you do an amazing move, which I jumped up in the air and cheered, because like for me, an overtake at Monaco is so special. Like Leclerc would have just breezed past everyone in DRS and probably been sixth by lap 10.
Yeah.
Which other tracks, you know, fair play, that's fine. But for me, it's special that one race in a year, we get that where it's more of a challenge.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And there are people that agree with you. And to be fair, I agree with you for this year. I thought it was a brilliant race. I really did enjoy it for Monaco as well, when you have such low expectations. Although at the same time, we had very high expectations going into the race with Sky Sports and everyone else saying it's a 90% chance of rain, and we got about 3 droplets. At Sal_Munro says, pretty cool, actually. Roberto Carlos, I don't think it's the actual one, says, better than expected. And fan_Nans, nerve-wracking AF. Now, I'll allow that, even though that's technically 4 words. But it was nerve-wracking. It was tense. And I think that was the as you say, that was Monaco. You know, you're not going to see bundles of overtaking. But at the same time, I was absolutely glued, thanks to the Mercedes strategists, you have to say. Without that, we wouldn't have had anywhere near as good a race. So, you know, it was a blunder from them. And, you know, they'd been seen by a lot of people as being flawless throughout this season, but that's because they never really had any pressure. And as soon as they had a little bit of pressure...
How painful for Ferrari that Mercedes bottle their strategy and still win. Ferrari do it and, you know, there's huge consequences and everyone's on their back. But yeah, I loved the race personally. What about you?
Looking at
what about
me?
You, Jess? Go on.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, so I was very happy. And I think, you know, I'd been quite honest with Tommy and I'd messaged him after qualifying. Because qualifying, don't get me wrong, I love watching Monaco qualifying. I absolutely love it. I don't think there's any other track where you can see a car like at full tilt.
The swimming pool section is just unbelievable. Like that literally like is like goosebumps, like watching those cars through. It's awesome.
And just, I think there's no more, I don't know if there is another track where you can have that same look. Maybe Singapore, but the respect of the drivers, you know, the amount of skill and attention that they have to apply going around those streets is phenomenal. And it's just, for me, usually Sunday lets it all down. And yes, it was not a horrible Monaco, and I was pleasantly surprised that it wasn't. It's a bit like, though, so you know how we said the same thing about Baku, right? Baku is meant to give you all the ingredients for an absolutely crazy race, and we've had, it's been 50-50 now.
Yeah.
Two absolutely phenomenal races and two kind of a bit more meh races because, you know, things haven't aligned or you know, whatever. And I think Monaco, we just had a lot of like crazy stuff happening. Obviously, a lot of it played into the part, like Charles being kicked out in Q1. That was drama that then fed into the race and then gave us something that spiced up Monaco. I think if we hadn't have had that, maybe we wouldn't have had as much going on. Mm. So, and again, like you can't live on what ifs. So, yeah. Bullet point, it wasn't a boring race. I still struggle with the fact that a limping car still won, which for me, I know you're going to say that's Monaco, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and
I totally understand.
A part of me does agree, because a lot of people come at me and I think, I don't know, maybe it's just the way I express myself, but everyone thinks I hate everything, which isn't true.
Bottas feels that way.
I love F1. And yeah, okay, maybe this race proved me wrong. In terms of whether it should stay on the calendar or not, I still think we have to look into, like, because that's not going to be, like, next year it might be boring again. And then we'll be back to how many boring races for a good race are we going to balance and say we're happy with? Tommy, forever. He wouldn't care if there was 25 more boring races at Monaco. True. You'd still love it. And that's fine. So maybe I need to kind of, like...
The thing is, like, everyone's...
Reword how I feel about it.
I agree with you. Like, everyone's entitled to their opinion. Like, some people love watching strategy. Some people love watching overtakes. Like, I saw comments that were like, oh, there was way more overtaking at Indy. It's like, well, It's like a 2.5 mile oval with cars that are designed to slipstream. Like, of course it is. Like, what I love about Monaco, and I think some people confuse, like, I love Monaco, every race should be Monaco.
Mm-hmm. No,
mine is like, it's one race in the year where you get something different. Like, last year, Daniel Ricciardo won when Mercedes and Ferrari were the most dominant teams. Daniel Ricciardo won. Like, I remember Mercedes winning when Red Bull were really dominant. Like, Jules Bianchi got a point in a manner.
Yes,
it is ridiculous. I totally understand how some people can think it's almost farcical and stupid. But for me, I just want F1 to be unpredictable. And that race, like, no one knows when to pit. Safety car comes out and Daniel Ricciardo and Magnussen pitted, and you thought, that's definitely the right thing. And then they got absolutely shafted.
But I think,
do you know what I mean? Like, it can change.
The pole sitter still won in a car that on any other circuit. And again, like, we're doing what ifs and taking situations out and putting them in new circuits or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, Max, in my eyes, Max deserved to win that race. Like, yeah. I mean, Lewis, like, okay, so everyone's coming out and saying, was that the drive of the generation? Like, he was under pressure for the entire time. But also, and not to take away the win from him, because I think he was a... I'm going to sound contradictory here. He didn't do anything that would leave him undeserving of a win. Obviously, the Mercedes strategists arguably got it wrong. But, well, no, they didn't, because he still won the race. Because it's Monaco. And they, like, even though, like, his tyres could have blown up and it would have been a DNF and that would have been catastrophic, the strategist was still 100% sure that he was going to make it to the end. And I mean, Tommy was messaging me during the race going, my heart is beating so fast, my heart is beating so fast. But I was sat there going, there's no way Max is going to overtake him. So unless his tyres blow out, there's no way he's lost this race.
Yeah, but it's Max Verstappen. Like, he was always going to go for a lunge. And he did, like, make an attempt, albeit it wasn't really there. But the argument you said about, like, Hamilton... I saw Seen Through Glass, Sam, who was on this podcast, wasn't he?
Canada last year.
Yeah.
Almost a year ago, geez.
Yeah, I know. So if you're listening, because he did say he listened. But he put something on his Instagram that said, let's be honest, if it was any other track, Verstappen would have overtaken in two laps and gone.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is, it was only because of Monaco that Verstappen was anywhere near Hamilton anyway, because Hamilton could have checked out.
Yeah.
With medium tyres and pitted.
And pitted again, yeah.
And but it would have been fine.
This so is the thing, like it's you can't take one situation out of the mix and say
so
Max would have won because, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Like anywhere else and you would have had to have pitted and that would have been the end of it. So I'm kind of like, I'm really conflicted.
Yeah.
I don't know why people don't
like it, because it is, like, for me, I love it, but I completely understand that some people are like, this is farcical.
Yeah.
Like, because there were things, like, we'll probably go into it later, like Lando Norris just cruising around to help his teammate.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that at Monaco, and some people might think that's unsporting, but, and then you get the other people that think, you know, that's Monaco.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
I think for me, Hamilton's drive definitely rates above Daniel Ricciardo's, purely because, I mean, they were two completely separate issues, but the difference is Ricciardo had less power, which clearly at Monaco doesn't matter as much. That's why Red Bull are so much closer to Mercedes, etc. Whereas Hamilton had a variable in his car where his front left was hardly getting round the hairpin.
He had so much understeer.
He had to manage. Like, he could have snatched a brake at any point during that race when his tyres had gone. And I think that's where it kind of puts his performance a lot higher, purely
and
because
I think having
it's that
a
unknown.
Driver like Max Verstappen behind you,
yeah.
who you know if... any sniff of an opportunity, like, Verstappen would have gone for it. Like, if he's ever so slightly wide at a certain corner, he'd dive down the inside. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, like, that's even more pressure to withhold.
And the thing that frustrates me when I see loads and loads of people saying, well, it's Monaco, you know, he's going to win. You know, that it's Monaco in a Formula One. Like, it's as I'm sure you agree, you know, it's such an impressive spectacle, and to be on such degrading tyres where he is literally, as I say, failing to get around the hairpin almost. You know, he is in a situation that he's not used to, 60 odd laps on the mediums. His car was handling like an absolute donkey, and he's going round Monaco at such high speeds. You know, for me, that kind of gives...
Well, the Williams were actually going faster than Hamilton was towards the end. Like, the Williams were lapping quicker than Hamilton. But that's because, yeah, as you say, like, he was in massive management mode.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he wasn't going... I guess it's kind of linking into my three-word race review, which is Lewis, it's James.
That's
a really good impression.
The strategist really had to, I mean, Bono, Lewis's race engineer, had to massively manage Lewis's state of mind around, because of the pressure Max was putting on. And I think, you know, he was so sure that his tyres were not going to make it, that he was going to throw it all away, that he was going to lose it all. But it's still Monaco. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, you're absolutely right, Matty. Like, he had to do so much to manage that car. But because of the state of Monaco, yeah, I think it played into his hands more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
Track position is everything. That's like a unique trait of Monaco.
Yeah, because I tweeted during the race, there was like 15 laps to go, and he was like, I can't make it. And I was like,
what are you going to do?
You're literally at Monaco. You are fine.
Have you ever watched Monaco?
Yeah, all you have to do is keep it on the track.
Well, 2015, he did pit.
Yeah, and he lost the race.
Yeah.
And I think he's spoken about that, and he's admitted afterwards, you know, I was never going to pit.
Yeah. And that's what I said in Internet's Best Reactions, was that I'm kind of like, I understand that he probably was quite frustrated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, has he sold an absolute... Obviously, Red Bull were going to try and overtake him anyway. But, like, was he trying to sell some sort of mind game there? Because for me, I think he was, purely because
I don't think he was. And I think, you know, the engineers, and then when James comes on the old radio, they basically just say... shut the up, like, yeah, and just get home.
Just drive, yeah.
Just because he's...
Just drive.
I mean, obviously none of us have heard the whole radio transcript, but everything was like, yeah, it's not going to make it. But everybody, as we've just covered, it was literally a case of either get the car home or you've lost this race, mate. Yeah. So it's up to you.
I don't understand why Lewis was like that, though. You know, it's Monaco. If he pitted, he would have been fourth. And
yeah, I think it's just the stress of the situation. Like,
he wants to be...
The thing is, like, I think we've said this before. We'll never know what it's like to drive a Formula One car in a race with so many people watching you. Mm. You're driving at like full speed. The adrenaline must be unbelievable. Yeah. And the last thing Lewis Hamilton is thinking in his mind is, probably shouldn't moan because people will give me grief on TV because this is going to be broadcast. All he's thinking is, I'm going to lose Monaco. Like, this is so damn hard to drive.
Yeah.
Because my team have put me on the wrong tyres. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all that's going through his mind. Like, for all the people saying he's moaning, and I hate to say this because it's really annoying that we have to say this, like, I'm not a fanboy, but... but, like, Ayrton Senna, Alain Prost, like, no doubt, if they had team radios back in their day, like, you've seen that Brazil race where it's raining and Senna's waving his arms in the air, like, cancel the race because it's raining. Like, imagine if they had team radio, he'd be like complaining. And if it was social media, everyone would be like, oh, Senna, shut up. It's this social media generation. Like, we get to hear everything and we get to comment on it.
Well, we get to hear the highlights. We don't hear everything.
Well,
do we?
Not
you
everything.
Know,
but
Gasly might be saying something horrific to his team, but because it's Gasly, he might not get shown on TV. And Hamilton going, wow, you know, get me off his tyres.
Because that's what made the race, like, for me, like, there was drama all the way through. You were like, I think I put it on our Twitter page, like, can we just have Hamilton's radio just on for the rest of the race?
But I wanted to hear what Max was saying.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we got snippets, and like when you know, he got the Mode 7 Max to the end. Yeah. Like, it was...
And then Lewis's one was hilarious. Like, oh, great news.
Oh, great, yeah. Lewis, he gets told he's got overtake as an option.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, brilliant.
That was quite funny.
This is exactly what I need when my front left is literally... shredded to bits.
Yeah. I think what helped Hamilton is his rears were fine, so he could just get traction out
the
corners.
That's the thing, in the important parts.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that Verstappen and Hamilton battle, because I was monitoring it. Every time we'd go into the tunnel, you'd see it about four and a half tenths. You'd be like, no, it's not a chance. But then there was that one lap towards the end where it was three and a half, and I was like, oh, hello, this is it. This is the overtake. And then he went for it. And, yeah. Well,
I'm surprised Lewis turned in, to be honest, because he's got a championship to think about. But again, that just shows how much a driver wants to win Monaco that he's willing to, like, he's not in that mode. He's like, well, I'm going to turn in. Obviously, he's turning into his normal corner, and Max was very ambitious.
He was unbelievably lucky, Hamilton, to get away with no puncture.
Yeah,
I can't believe that.
Yeah, that's very true.
Bottas got a puncture from the tiniest of touches in the pit lane.
Yeah.
And then Verstappen has thwacked Hamilton, and neither of them really have got any damage.
One thing I would say as well is, and it was going to be one of my three-word race views, is more nose cam. Like, that camera on Verstappen's nose,
oh,
we
brilliant.
Saw it for like 5 seconds, and it was like, why aren't we having this for like lap after lap? Because this is awesome. And yeah, again, like, without going too much into it, like, I thought the TV camera stuff was pretty poor again. Like, they were focusing on a Haas when Verstappen finally made his move and stuff. But I think, Verstappen, fair play for going for it. But the thing is, it's too late anyway then, because he probably couldn't have got first.
That's a good question, which we were going to ask from a fan. Joel _ Cohen says, do you think Max could have driven 5 seconds away from the rest if he had made an overtake? I think, hands down,
I think he needed four laps, maybe.
Yeah, not...
Maybe even
I don't think
three.
Even that. I think three.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, three laps.
Because Hamilton was, as you say at the end, driving slower than a Williams.
Yeah.
If Verstappen on the hards, albeit he had pushed very hard
on them.
Yeah,
some graining as well, but
he
could have done it.
He would have flown away.
So what do we think... What do we think of that unsafe release?
I think it would have been okay until he turned into him and gave him a puncture.
Well, wasn't it...
But the puncture wasn't, I guess.
The puncture came from Bottas hitting the wall, no? I thought it came from him hitting the barrier.
Did it?
I didn't know that.
I thought it was Verstappen's contact.
I think that was a really close call. You know, the annoying thing was is like I needed to see different angles of the release. But I mean, the rules are the rules, right? You can't release a car into traffic in the pit lane. It's not safe. People can get seriously hurt. But like, so just to go over it again. So Lewis comes into the pits, changes onto the mediums, and Mercedes double stack, and Bottas whacks on the brake, so he's got the pit crew have more time to ready his tires, and then he pulls in. Vettel and Verstappen both pit, but the Red Bulls are so quick on the old, and obviously they haven't double stacked, so they've got a little bit more prep time, and get it done quicker than Mercedes. But Bottas has been released into the pit lane. But literally by
it's such a tight pit lane,
of a second.
Like, it's really hard to judge, especially because Vettel's in the middle. But the interesting thing about that, which I've seen online, and credit to race fans for putting this up, the wording of the stewarding report is that the penalty was given for Verstappen making contact, not them giving an unsafe release.
So it was the contact. Okay.
So it says... Car 33 was released into car 77. Blah, blah, blah. Stewards did note that the pit of the car was extremely close. However, car 33 struck car 77 while continuing the move towards the fast lane and pulled ahead, gaining a sporting advantage. The stewards believe, although ahead at the time, the driver had the opportunity to avoid contact.
Yeah.
So that kind of changes the whole...
I don't know if I agree. Do you agree with that decision?
What, the Verstappen could have avoided
obviously
contact?
Because he just
comes out
and then he just drifts over, doesn't he? And
he's got room on the side.
But I guess that's what, because this is why, I mean, I've been desperately trying to watch this back a million times, but is he half a car length? Was Bottas half a car length alongside him?
He
drifted over?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because literally Verstappen's rear wheel goes between the car, his front.
Because pit lane incidents are really tough to judge, because where else was Max meant to go?
He could have stayed
straight.
He did
have a little bit.
He had enough space on
the side. But again, you can argue as analysing. And like you say, you're watching it 6-7 times.
Exactly,
and you still don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Verstappen drives out the pit lane. And, you know, it's easy to judge. This happens in all sports. You watch, pundits watch a slow-mo replay and go, what's he thinking?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He himself said he didn't know
Bottas was there.
Because I think it's easier for Bottas to see Verstappen's there than for Verstappen to see that Bottas is there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like rules, again, we've just said, like rules are rules. And if he did kind of squeeze Bottas illegally, then yes, the 5 second is deserved. But
I guess Max's argument would be that his team are saying go. So as far as he's concerned, he goes to the pits normally.
Yeah.
And he's probably not looking in his mirrors because his team have said go.
Well, he has to. You can't say that he's not looking in his mirrors. That's not.
But like he goes and obviously goes into there and Bottas is there. So it's kind of like it's one of those things where it could go either way.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's really harsh because obviously I think he maybe deserved it because it was touch and go, but
I think he did as well
because he'd driven so well. Apart from that, like he'd driven really sensibly, like the turn one off the line. Like I think in an old Max that could have ended
last
in
year
tears.
he would have stuck his nose in further into Bottas and got his front wing chopped off in that turn one, and probably dived up the inside of Portier and Hamilton and crashed into the, like hit Hamilton in the wall and got a 10-second penalty or something. Like you can tell his
demeanor's
changed. Yeah,
so it did feel kind of like but then be the rules, I guess.
Yeah, I was proud of Max. I thought he did really well. I thought he was really patient. I mean, the move that he went for, I don't really have anything against that. He went for it, he locked up, he clipped Hamilton, fair enough.
They were both on miles old tires,
and he had to go for it. So, and it didn't end in both of them in the wall. So for me,
he's driving really well. Like he's now got that consistency, but also there's, which I'm very thankful for, there's still that bit of Max Verstappen that's like, there's absolutely no way I'm not at least going for an overtake. And that's why he has so many fans.
Okay, my three-word race review now. And obviously it's about Charles. Charles's season deflates. Yeah. It
was not a good weekend at all, was it?
Yeah, it's awful.
I mean, his season can inflate again. You know, that it's only got 6 races in, but it's kind of gone from, you know, Ferrari looking great, Charles looking like, you know, he's top dog in the team in some of the races. And now, yeah, obviously the Ferrari qualifying strategy was questionable, to say the least, especially with Charles saying, can I go out? I don't think I'm safe.
Let me out.
I mean, some great memes coming out of WTF1. but yeah, it's a very odd strategy. I can see why potentially maybe sort of 5-6 minutes before the end of the session they were like, okay Charles, you're probably okay. He was only 6 tenths off the top. It's Monaco.
And also, like, if you looked at the drivers that were behind him at that point, Albon, Hulkenberg, they're all going to go quicker. He had like a buffer of loads of time.
Yeah, and they got Vettel back out.
Yeah.
That's what the
with
thing...
With 90 seconds to go.
Who then kicked his teammate out.
I mean, better meme I saw than the one of the, you know, where the child's in the pool and he's like, they're holding the kid up. And it's like Leclerc, and then like Leclerc's like drowning while Ferrari holding Vettel in the air. And I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if that's how it went. Like, it's happened with Raikkonen when he was at Ferrari and they only focus on one car and go, oh, sorry, who's this Raikkonen guy that wants to pit? Like, they're so focused on one car, it's almost like too hard to manage two cars. And especially now, someone like Charles, who can take the fight to Vettel, and you could argue has been quicker in some of the races, like, the championship points do not
reflect.
And that's probably even worse for Charles, because that almost gives Ferrari more chance to justify it. Even though,
but no one's
the
buying
only
it.
Reason is because no one's buying it.
No, it's a shame to see. Obviously, we don't know the ongoings inside the team, and
well,
you know,
they came
what the
out. I mean,
were, but...
props to Ferrari for holding a press conference after qualifying to actually explain what had happened, and they apologised and they said, "Yeah, absolutely, we got it completely and utterly wrong."
Just super awkward that they had a media day before it explaining strategy.
Wasn't it why qualifying is really important?
No, it was the power of the undercut. Yeah. So
he needed to. Yeah, they were so confident they thought they could undercut 19 cars.
No, actually, he started 15th, only 14. But
I can't believe. I'm not surprised because it's Ferrari. That he didn't pit on lap one, get tyres out of the way, catch the field back up, and then there's a safety car. You're laughing.
Yeah, it was...
Because his race got off to a good start.
Yeah.
His moves, oh my God, it, obviously I was literally buzzing.
He cut turn one, which was... He was just like, I just want to get through turn
he
one.
I don't think he had a choice, though, because I think, was it Hülkenberg who was there? And he couldn't... He would have hit Hülkenberg if he'd have stuck
to
the line.
A couple went over. There's no harm done, really, I don't think.
As soon as I saw the move on Lando, which... granted it was a great move, I was like, this is not going to end well.
Well, Lando left the door open. I mean, it's Monaco.
Yeah.
And the hairpin.
Yeah.
And a Ferrari's up your backside. So it's either I'm holding my line or I'm getting kicked out of Monaco.
Yeah.
But it was still like a ballsy move.
Yeah.
His move on Grosjean was unbelievable.
Oh, that move
I literally
was
got off my seat and like cheered. Like that was so effing good.
Yeah.
Like it was... The thing I'm so gutted about Hülkenberg, like that he ended up doing it again and messing up his race, is because regardless of where he finished, there'd have been, you know, like, oh, that was a move like just like Jules Bianchi's, and he was wearing the Jules Bianchi helmet and stuff, and you were just like, that would have been so good.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he just got a bit greedy, and he didn't even wait a lap, did he, going for the Hülkenberg?
He just thought, because that was the thing that I was so... in awe of, is that he'd sat on Grosjean and he'd watched where Grosjean was, where he's taking the line, and he was like, there's a gap there, there's a gap there, there's a gap there. And then when he got close enough, he made that move stick, and Grosjean was just a bit like, what?
Shocked that Grosjean complained about it.
Oh yeah, but he said it was a kamikaze move.
Yeah, it's like...
calm down. Like, you literally, nothing happened, and it was a clean move.
Yeah.
But he, I think you're right, Tommy, I think he just thought that move can work, and didn't maybe watch Hülkenberg as closely as he had watched Grosjean.
I think people are divided, right? I think, because I was going through the three-word race reviews, and people are very much divided of, like, Charles is an idiot, or he had to go for it.
Yeah,
so Connor, fair play.
Connor.Nor says Charles was brave, and Vlad_Noja says I am stupid. Now, what I was saying about the moves was that, you know, Lando's was great, and, you know, Grosjean's was unbelievable, but I could sense his mentality was desperate. Like, he made those moves stick, fair enough, but I could tell it wasn't going to end well.
And he said before the race had even started, like, he's like,
I'm going for it.
Or nothing. This is what I've got to do. So, but I don't know if that's like, I mean, again, we're talking about what ifs.
Yeah.
But if he'd have just taken, the thing I can't forgive is him destroying his own car with the laminated tire.
Yeah.
Like,
I cannot forgive.
It actually hurt me. I had to stop watching because they kept playing it in slow-mo of it.
It was like he
had a saw on the back of his car that was just destroying.
You could tell he was so angry. Like, he was just, I think, like, getting me back to the pits.
Yeah, and I think it's probably because Monaco means so much to him, right? Because it's his home race.
Yeah.
And
it's Jules, and it's his dad, and it's everything. Like, and he's got the pressure of being this young Ferrari driver. Everyone, even like the Sky coverage with like Natalie Portman, it was always like, you're 21.
Pink Portman.
Natalie Portman.
She's an actress, I think.
Well, it is Monaco, so maybe she was there. Sorry, Natalie Pinkham. Everything was just like, you're 21, you're in your second season of F1, you're in Ferrari, it's Monaco, it's Jules, it's your dad.
The pressure is unbelievable.
Jesus. Yeah. And then to get absolutely shafted
in qualifying.
He's
on he had his own grandstand, and he's like, there's pictures of him everywhere.
Mm.
But a really bad stat that I saw online, he's never finished at Monaco.
Yeah.
Two races in GP2, he was out. Last year,
really,
he's
never finished. That's
his Achilles heel.
Four races, and he's never finished. So. Oh.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it just does not work for him at his hometown. That's ridiculous. Mm. It's a shame to see. You know, Charles, as you say, there's a lot of pressure on him. There's a question here from J_Potter_02 says, "How do you feel about how Ferrari are clearly mistreating Charles?"
That's
now,
harsh.
I don't think that's fair.
Yes.
I don't think that's fair. I think that's just Ferrari clearly, obviously, messing up in qualifying. And I think they messed up in the race as well. Like, with his interviews and him saying, I'm going to go for it, you know, put him on a strategy that gives him a chance to, as you say, pit at really early. We've saw Hamilton manage just about mediums. You know, the hards can go 70 laps. They knew that going into the race. Like, give him that opportunity so when people do pit, I don't know, I just feel like it was a very strange mentality to go into it. It just seemed like it was going to be a disaster. You know, especially with the first few laps, just bring him in and just get some points.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I just don't feel like he was in that right mindset, personally. I feel like he was always trying to claw something back, and that's
He was on the back foot by a team error, and he didn't help it by...
No. Because it's Monaco, you can't greed at Monaco. Yeah. That's it. But
And again, it's the team's responsibility to manage the driver's mental state, like as we saw with Lewis. They should have, I don't know what the discussion was, but to allow someone to go into a race like Monaco going, I'm just gonna kamikaze everybody, as Grosjean said, even though that wasn't a kamikaze move, that's not good for the team.
No.
That's not good for the, like, to say like, I'm either gonna take everyone out and DNF or I'm gonna be the hero. Especially right now, they can't risk not finishing in the points.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they can because it's completely pointless trying to chase Mercedes. I saw the... who's the guy? There's a really cool guy that does the 8-bit graphics.
The gaps and stuff.
Usually.
I love that, yeah.
Visualize or something? Yeah, F1 Visualized. Check him out. Really good. He posted... a smaller one that basically had Ferrari's points, then Hamilton was like 2 points behind Ferrari's total points. Like, it's just it's crazy.
Yeah, let's turn our attention to a person that came back to our screens and our ears. K.Manish comes in with a 3-word race review. Niao guy back.
Yeah, that was random.
What on earth was that?
So at first I thought they were just maybe memeing it, and because it sounded exactly the same, like someone was playing an audio track.
Yeah.
But there is actually a video now of someone filming themselves in the stand next to the microphone. And not going to lie, I think Formula One are in danger of like that becoming a meme, to the point where fans at every race see a microphone on the track and go, I'm going to do this. And obviously they must have cut the audio straight away because they realised he was doing it.
Mm.
And it's like... It's in danger of that happening. Do you know what I mean?
Because
like,
everybody wants to be Niam
guy.
Strange.
Appeared for a bit.
I know. I didn't actually hear it at first, and then everyone was tweeting about it. I was like, wait, hold on. And then watched it. I was like, that literally sounds like the same person, doesn't it?
But
hey, let's hope it doesn't happen too much, because it's funny the first or second time, but then it gets a little bit silly. Right. Do you know what time it is?
How much
it's time for ABCDEF1.
Are we sure that all teams are on that list this time? Because last podcast we missed out Racing Point.
No, they are there. We just ignored those two for some reason. we just moved straight on.
Yeah.
Right, let's begin with Williams.
Oh, we're going from the back.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Well done, Williams.
Well done, George Russell, for causing that kamikaze thing, but then not actually being George Russell. Yeah. That was interesting, wasn't it? Yeah, so George Russell, 15th on merit.
I know.
At one point he said he was fighting for 6th, or thought he was fighting for 6th, which was fair play.
I mean,
he's like, dreaming big.
Yeah, he
I
saw
like
a car
that.
And was like, hey, that's 6th.
Did you watch his interview on Paddock Pass?
I didn't.
Oh, right. Because I thought he said something brilliant that was... he said that even though like Williams are in a dire state at the moment and he's not really got a chance, he was like, I was absolutely going for it because one day when I have the car behind me, I need to be ready.
Yeah.
And I think for a young driver who's been winning everything in junior formula and now he's at a car that can't even compete with the midfield, to still have that mentality of like, I need to do everything in this car to prove myself.
Well,
like, fair play to him.
I'm betting he's obviously like he's contracted through Mercedes and
he's banking on that,
but I think he will have also have been told when he got given when he got chosen for that Williams seat, I'm betting he's not an idiot. He will have said, okay, that's fine, but what's my progression plan? Like, what year am I aiming for? He put that on his PowerPoint. But you think that's what I'm thinking, like, if he's very clinical, So I'm under no illusion that he's aiming for bigger and better things already, and this is just him keeping his butt in F1.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the only thing he can do really is beat Kubica and now potentially beat a few other people on the grid at tracks like Monaco.
So,
and
so who did he finish ahead of? Raikkonen, Stroll, Giovinazzi, Kubica.
Giovinazzi.
We can't convert you, can we?
No.
So George, I think it's an A.
An A, 100%. Yeah. I wrote A down here.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Robert Kubica, he got ploughed, didn't he?
Yeah. Unfortunately, he actually was ahead at the start, and I don't know if you heard this, but there was a bit of beef at the end.
Beef.
A bit of beef.
What was the beef?
So Kubica was on his slowdown lap, and there's a very awkward team radio message where he goes, I thought the car ahead got priority pit stop. And then there's a really awkward silence and they go, we'll talk about it later.
Oh, so George pitted earlier.
So George pitted earlier. Which, to be fair, like, you split your strategy in Monaco. Like, it's, again, like what we've been saying at the start of the podcast, it's an unusual race, mm-hmm. because the guys that pitted early actually ended up getting shafted.
Yeah, yeah.
Ricciardo got absolutely shafted.
He was running fifth, sixth.
But so I guess they thought they'll gamble with Russell.
He got to fourth.
Is it fourth?
He got to fourth on lap one. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He was fifth.
Yeah, he did.
I was going
to
say
he got up to fourth.
No, he wasn't behind. No, because it's the two Mercedes,
Ferrari, and Red Bull.
Red Bull.
And fifth. Then yeah, it was fifth.
He didn't overtake a Red Bull.
Anyway, you were saying, Tommy, whilst Jess works it out.
But yeah, Kubica was kind of angry at that. But to be fair, like, he split the strategy, and unfortunately, he just found himself as an unfortunate. Like, he got the wrong strategy. That happens at Monaco.
Yeah,
you get really lucky in the pit stops, or really unlucky. And like you said, Daniel Ricciardo and Kevin Magnussen got absolutely shafted, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
but I'd give him a B because he was
because Magnussen was. Was it Ricciardo was covering Magnussen, or the other way around, and they both just ruined each other's races by following each other? So Robert Kubica, you want to give a B?
I think a B.
Yeah.
He was up there, like,
and he was unlucky. Do you know if he had any damage after the Giovinazzi?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Anyway, Toro Rosso, Daniel Kvyat.
B.
Yeah, decent race.
Where did he finish?
Quite high up.
He's having a stellar season.
Toro Rosso absolutely nailed their strategy.
Yeah,
they both
P7
to not skip ahead. Like, they were 7th and 8th, right?
Yep.
And I think a B for both of them, but mainly it was their team that nailed it for him. Like, what a performance! And Toro Rosso is looking really quick.
Yeah,
all through practice and qualifying, they looked really competitive. It was really nice to see.
I think it was maybe practice. Maybe one of the qualifying sessions, like, Gasly must have been getting a bit sweaty when he saw, like, Albon and Kvyat ahead of him, like, oh God.
Because
they were up there, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Kvyat's had a great season so far. You know, he's really come back to F1 again with a bang. Like, he's amazing what that man's been through, and he's still got the pace and the performance. So B for Kvyat, and Alex Albon, again, he's coming into his own as well now, isn't he? So both Bs?
Double Bs.
Okay, Alfa Romeo, Kimi Raikkonen. He was just a train, wasn't he? He was
a train driver. Damage at the start. He went up the inside of Stroll, hit him at the hairpin, and his car was crabbing, he said.
Crabbing. What does that mean?
Like, you know, like when you're like, it's a bit of suspension damage and you're like,
oh, he's going sideways.
Yeah. So like, his car was heavily damaged, but I'd give him a D. Like, he was just not in the mood. He was very grumpy all weekend. He was like, it's Monaco, you can't overtake. Oh, I don't care.
Okay.
I'd say D.
Fine. Yeah.
Sure. Antonio Giovinazzi.
Oh, F. You. He had an awful time.
ABCDEF1 does not have a U, so we'll give him an F. Okay,
he's so out of his depth at the moment. Like, he needs a performance.
It's not looking good, really, is it? No.
And you know, you could argue that in his second race, when he just crashed pretty much every session or whenever it was. But yeah, it just doesn't seem like F1 suiting him at the moment.
It's harsh, but like, F1 is ruthless, and you don't have time.
You don't have time to get used to the car.
They're not going to give you 2 years. Like, get used to it.
So F. Racing Point, Sergio Perez.
I was going to say C, but maybe we should give him a B for not plowing down two marshals. Did you see that?
Oh, that was incredible.
Lee, scary.
Well, yeah.
Was that during the safety car?
It was during the safety car, but they can obviously go like pretty much full speed to catch it up.
Out of the pit lane.
And he came out of the pits, floored it, and two marshals were running across the track, and he missed one of them by...
What were they doing? That second marshal may have looked and gone, I can make this, and then gone, well, actually,
well,
maybe
I guess because the pit lane, like, if you're looking at the pits, you don't see the pits because it's, like, behind a barrier.
Yeah.
And he's gone, everyone's behind the safety car. We've got a clear run here. Mm. And there must have been something in his ear that said, go, unless they did it on their own accord, which is very dodgy. But, yeah, Perez put a video up on his own Twitter, didn't he, and said...
It was almost catastrophic, that was, wasn't it? Yeah, jeez, awful. It was scarily close. We'll give him a B for being a lifesaver.
Yeah.
Lance Stroll.
F.
What's worse than an F?
A, B, C, D, F. One?
One. He gets a one.
Well, you get a U if you don't get a grade, right?
We'll give him an F.
Honestly, like, Stroll, it's really bad. Like, Stroll gets a lot of stick for being a paid driver and all this kind of stuff. And I genuinely wanted him to do well in Racing Point and be like, look, like, he's a decent driver. He won the F3 championship.
I deserve some credit, sort of thing.
Like, you can't judge him in a Williams. Like, he's just dreadful. Like, he's now 10 times he's been out in Q1 in a row. 10 times in a row.
And Perez wins a lot.
And Perez, he
usually makes Q2,
there.
Doesn't he?
Like,
and
he was behind a Williams.
It's stuff like who was getting in the way of the lapping cars.
Yeah, he lost Bottas 2 seconds in the final sex. He couldn't even get out.
He couldn't even get out of the way.
He was dreadful.
Both you and Sink.
Get out of my head.
And what I found interesting, I can't remember who tweeted it. It was someone in F1 Media was saying that, you know, Lance Stroll to the media, it looks like someone's forcing him to be there.
Yeah, like he just doesn't give off this air. Like, you are a Formula One driver.
Yeah, confident, he's probably, maybe he takes all it to heart. Like, that all the stuff about, like dad's just paid you to be there.
And then he just doesn't want to talk to the media because of that. Yeah. But yeah, at least he's the best teammate Perez has ever had, right? You know, that's what Sergio said.
Yeah, how to keep you dry.
Disgusting. Perez, thank you very much. I'll take that moolah.
I love my boss.
Okay, so F for Lance Stroll. McLaren, Carlos Sainz.
A.
Did you see his lap one?
Yes.
Yes, on Twitter and not during the race again.
No, I go, exactly.
Oh, God's sake.
It's like, oh, look at this move that we didn't see.
Yeah, look at this incredible move around the outside. Thanks, Twitter.
And then when
why didn't we see that during the race?
When he had to beat the Toro Rossos when everyone was pitting and he put in the fastest lap of the race, he did like a 1:15 to keep in front of the Toro Rossos. Just incredible,
work. It's the move round the outside. Like, he gets one of them and you think, oh, that's an epic move.
Mm.
And then outbreaks the next one and goes around the outside.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was awesome.
For Carlos, who I think we've been a little bit critical of him in terms of he's not the best driver on the grid, but that was a really good performance.
He's really coming into his own and... he's one to watch.
I think we forget he's still like 21, 22, isn't he?
24.
Like, I think he's, 24, is he? Okay,
I think he's a really good suit for McLaren.
Yeah.
That now they're going through this kind of period where they need to kind of build back up.
Resurgence.
They can't have a really they can't have a world champion driver that's just going to get frustrated.
Yeah.
It's a really good driver that he can just, a solid performer that's going to help him get back to the top.
An obvious little nod to his teammate for helping him out a little bit.
Yeah, not many teammates would do that.
Who we would now talk about, Lando Norris. I think it's because they're not challenging for podiums, they're not challenging for wins. Lando's in his first season at McLaren. It's a fair, solid play from him to do that. You know,
I saw there was actually a few questions that were along the lines of so I wanted to know your guys' opinion on it. That was like, is it fair? Lando blocking, and for me,
it's team Monaco.
Sport. It's F1.
One, it's Monaco, and two, it's a team sport.
Yeah.
And the team must absolutely bloody love Lando if he's willing to be like, I'm not going to get points, I'm really struggling. Yeah, I'll block everyone.
I guess he'll do that in the sense of if it rolls reversed,
next,
Carlos helps me, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think they had an exchange on Twitter I saw where he was like, the science was like, I owe you one.
Yeah.
Or something like that, and it's like, cool. I think it's really nice to see them as a teammate pairing. Yeah. I think they've very, very much got that kind of brotherly thing that I really missed about having Ricardo and Verstappen together. They had that kind of brotherly, right? But when it gets heated and they are competing for the same position, then maybe we will lose it a little bit. Yeah. But
I love that Carlos Sainz like has gone from a teammate that's famous for like shouting no when he, like Verstappen, like absolutely ruthless, wouldn't even let him past when he was much quicker, for a teammate, to a teammate that's going to like block the whole grid for him. He's like, oh, this is nice.
Well, it's fair play from Lando. I think, you know, he's clearly recognised this is Monaco. I'm not really going to gain, I might gain one more position and get 10th. Yeah. I think that's what he said, you know, but instead he's helping his team.
Shows he's a team player, which other teams are going to, you know,
you don't get a trophy for 10th. Exactly. So that's probably why he did it. So Lando B.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Haas, Romain Grosjean.
B?
I'd say a B, because 50 laps 50 on the softs. 50
laps on the softs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where finished did he? The points. He's finished P10.
10th.
I'd get an A if he didn't complain about Charles' move.
And, like, he got really bad luck in quali.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like that radio message. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
A lot of beeps.
Yeah, you can hear it. It was just beep the entire thing.
The unfiltered one's interesting as well for people that want to check that out. But Romain Grosjean, decent result, I guess, from a difficult position. Kevin Magnussen,
that was a strategy, wasn't it?
Qualifying was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like he was buzzing like after his lap. Like he genuinely there was a video where he was like cheering and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After his.
It was like he'd won.
It was like he'd won the race, yeah.
And he's really outperforming.
He hit the wall at one point and he was just going for it.
He's really outperforming Grosjean at the moment as well.
Yeah. But that doesn't surprise me.
Grosjean, I guess, has been seen as someone that potentially has more of the outright pace but just never gets it together. But Magnussen just seems like he's got it all at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, and again, it's going on the Netflix series, that Grosjean is still there because Gunther, even when, because they were interviewing Gunther, weren't they, when Charles made the move?
Yeah.
And Grosjean complained and he was like, no, it's fine. Like, get on with it.
Yeah.
And for me, Gunther Steiner seems like the kind of person, you can see why he likes Magnussen. Magnussen's like an all-out, straight-talking, almost like a 70s F1 driver.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't give a shit.
And he has
anything.
Elbows as well.
Yeah, and he's like ruthless. And Grosjean is more, you know, like...
Oh no. On the inside. Don't.
Yeah, and you can see why he probably prefers Magnussen.
Yeah, Magnussen I'd probably see because of his result. Like,
yeah, it's harsh. It's really hard to score because his qualifying was so good and he would have got a really good result. But
the strategy.
The strategy screwed him, which you could argue isn't his fault.
No.
BC.
I'm going to give him a B.
Okay, we'll go with a B.
All right, B.
Renault, Daniel Ricciardo. Now, if we're giving Magnussen a B, we have to give Ricciardo a B, don't
Ricciardo
we?
Because
his start was unbelievable. He was in such a good position. Where did he finish up in the end, Ricciardo?
He finished P9.
P9. So what could have been, I guess, for Ricciardo? Yeah.
After being held up for a long time. It was really crazy to see, though, that gap open up between the
fourth
top
and
four and then him.
It
was
looked at it. Oh, it's 11 seconds and it's lap five or
something.
Yeah. Oh my
God, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's the field spread, well, between the top and the midfield was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, Nico Hülkenberg.
Oh, didn't really. Yeah.
Get up.
Can we rate that as that?
Yeah, out of 10.
Out of 10. C.
Okay.
D.
Where did he finish? 14th, did he?
14th, yeah. Okay.
D.
Yeah. Yeah, fine.
Sure, we'll do it. Red Bull, Max Verstappen.
A.
Ooh.
Yeah,
right. A.
B.
Ooh, why a B?
Get in the
right. Bin. Yeah, this is difficult for me, guys.
This is like me saying this Charles going to crash.
No,
like,
this is the only time I've not given him A. So did you hear about his talk setting?
Yeah,
as well,
he had it in the wrong mode.
Which was his mistake. You know, he was you meant to change your torque setting in the pits because it's the only time you can do it, and he forgot to do it. So the rest of the race, he was on the wrong torque setting, and you know,
change it in the pits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a hindsight thing of like, would that have allowed him more traction out of the corners?
Explain what that means to people that don't know what a torque setting.
Well,
Tommy's like sweating now.
I put you on the spot here.
This is the thing.
That was a kamikaze move. Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
He can't talk to the team.
No, I mean, it's the thing is, right, there's so many things in F1 now, and I'll actually go on to talk about this. In Nico Rosberg's latest podcast, him and Daniel Ricciardo are having a chat about engine map settings, and it's beeped. The whole thing is beeped, like they beep it out. and they're like having a chat and they beep it all out and they're talking about all these buttons and stuff, and you don't, like, fans don't know what that does.
Yeah.
Like, and it's almost like we want to see more of it, but the teams don't want to tell us.
Sure. Of course they don't.
So, you know, you could applaud them for being like, oh, they have to do all this, but they're never going to tell us what it does.
Mm.
But yeah, so he was in the wrong setting.
Okay.
That's what Honda said. He was in the wrong setting.
It must be something to do with power output.
Yeah, like, it is, and it compromised. Yeah. They said it did compromise his engine.
Okay.
So that was a slight mistake. Maybe he could have given more room. It's really harsh because he definitely deserved to be on the podium. It sucks that he was fourth and only one place ahead of Gasly.
Mm.
He was terrible.
Okay, I've changed my grade to a B now.
Yeah.
All right, then I'm outvoted. But can we just make a note that I gave Max Verstappen an A?
For everybody.
And I gave him a B, so I'm not a fanboy.
Oh,
no,
God.
You definitely still are. Okay, B.
Yeah.
B. Pierre Gasly.
D. Done. He was just
off the pace.
Just disappointing. He's
and everyone was like, "Oh my god, he was catching up at the end." Yes, because Lewis was slower than a Williams,
and he pitted for fresh.
Yeah, he got
rubber.
The free point for being last of the midfield, which happened again. And if it keeps happening, I'm not going to be amused.
Well, weirdly, because all the commentators were saying like, "No, we're not going to have that this race. No one's going to have a big enough gap," but. Pierre did. Massive gap.
Pierre, let's just say Pierre was slow because he wanted that.
He needs
fastest
to have
lap.
One race where he beats Verstappen.
Like, or at you least think, gets close.
It's not going to happen.
Think, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Ooh.
For the
unless,
whole season.
Unless Max, unless Max has something catastrophically going wrong, I don't see how he can beat Verstappen.
You're going to like my Canada predictions. Ferrari, Sebastian. So Gasly D. Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel.
C.
Just mediocre.
Just a decent drive. Like, didn't really go for it.
Rumours of him retiring.
Yeah.
I think it's Joe Sayard came out saying that the biggest rumour is that he's off at the end of the year.
But then you said that
that's come out
a few
before
times.
Because like that he's been saying certain things like maybe these cars just don't suit me and stuff, which I agree with. Like people are being very critical of him the way he's driving now. I don't think you can argue that he was nothing sort of unbelievable when he was at Red Bull.
Yeah.
Regardless of that car, he was trouncing Webber. He was winning 9 races in a row. Like those cars,
he was
and Vettel
yeah.
was the perfect package in F1. Maybe like, and he's admitting he's like, maybe these F1 is not for me. This new hybrid era, it's not my bag.
Fair. Okay, so C for Vettel. Charles Leclerc.
F.
D.
F.
Maybe D.
Qualifying forced him into a D.
Yeah.
But then I can't forgive him destroying his car. I can't. It's an F. That is just showing his inexperience or his lack of maturity, and which is something that usually he carries a lot of. And yes, okay, we've just said everything else that was on top of him, but it's his job to manage that.
Yeah, E.
And then. I cannot
E.
Yeah.
E. We'll get E.
E.
Yeah.
We'll give him an E.
No, it's an F.
E.
No, E.
Two E's, one F.
Overruled. Hate getting overruled.
Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, A.
A.
Yeah.
You look like you were hesitating for a second there.
No, I was looking down at my notes. And
okay.
Thinking, yeah,
okay. Cool. So A for Lewis Hamilton. Valtteri Bottas.
We've not spoken about him yet, but he got royally shafted, didn't he? Really?
Yeah. He could have easily got pole. Like he was looking like he probably would have got pole.
It was so close. Wasn't it?
Made a mistake on his final run.
But again, I guess like that again plays into in Monaco. It's so important to out qualify your teammate because you get preferential
which
strategy.
Which you would have probably put your bets on, considering his run of form recently in qualifying. You know,
he's quick, isn't he?
Valtteri was gonna. I mean, he's stepped up
and
his
Hamilton,
game in qualifying this
Hamilton
year.
Hamilton at Monaco is never. He's never that amazing.
No,
at Monaco, like it's not one of his best circuits. So,
and Hamilton had a proper sketchy couple of last corners as well on his lap.
Really
he would have done a 109.
Pole, yeah.
But okay. So Valtteri Bottas B.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
C.
No, it's the puncture that wasn't his fault.
Yeah, it's difficult because, like, you look back at all the results and you're like, well, he was better than him. I don't know.
Bottas would have finished second had it not been for Verstappen.
Yeah.
B. Overruled.
Overruled.
Okie dokie. That is ABCDEF1 done. Let's talk about our predictions for Monaco, which
I'm actually
Indy 500. Looking at. Oh, for God's sake. We'll talk about Indy 500 in a minute. We'll go through our predictions first for Monaco.
Oh, okay.
Tommy, it'll be the best race of the season so far. Full or half?
It's not the best race of the season so far. It's not the best race of the season. Overall.
Half a point.
Bahrain was pretty decent.
No,
I thought it was better than Bahrain.
No. I think no points.
I think most people think it's better than Bahrain. Half the people think it's better than Bahrain.
It'll be the best race of the season so far. No. I'm not allowing that. Zero
Why?
Points.
Because I think it was.
Tough. Overall.
You're overruled. No points. Welcome to my world.
All the Monaco fans will be in the comments right now going, Tommy's been robbed. Okay. Yeah. Someone will miss qualifying after an FP3 crash. You put half a point. What?
Yeah. Vettel crashed and then Leclerc went out, so it's pretty much...
You are literally cheating so hard,
I'm
Tommy.
I'm sorry, I'm not getting a half a point for that
No
either.
Points.
Jess, Max will split the Mercedes on the podium. Now, this is
you
half
ruined
a
it.
Point.
If you hadn't have said the podium, you would have got a full point.
I know. But I like
being
specific.
Yeah.
But I get half a point. I'll take half a point.
Half a point. Okay, won't need to watch the race after Saturday as top six will finish exactly as they qualify. Now, Tommy has actually put no points and then in brackets, ha.
Yeah, you're really enjoying this, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'll take it. No points.
No points. Okay, me. Leclerc crashes.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Sensed it. Full point for me. And certain celebrity three times on a boat. I don't know.
There was a lack of celebrity.
Yeah. There was a lot of celebrities there, but...
Yeah, they didn't do the whole, like, Will Smith. There was too much action. There was actually a decent race that they didn't have to show Will Smith.
Damn. No points.
100 times.
Fans, Ruds, Dion, Mars. Enough DNFs for Williams to score points.
Half a point. They beat some cars.
They beat
and
some cars.
And that was so unexpected.
Half a point.
A
Castro 13050. It's going to be a moist GP.
The camera was moist.
Yeah, half a point. The camera was wet.
I feel like that was put in for my benefit from the last one.
And Midwest Harry 7, a new driver in the top five for the first time this year.
Yeah, Gasly.
Four point.
Gasly.
Cool. Predictions for Canada.
Tommy, let's hear your two that you've got.
Verstappen or Leclerc will hit the wall of champions at some point, and then people think they're hilarious by saying that it's the future wall of champions because they're going to be future champions.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Verstappen or Leclerc, you've spread your bets a little bit there.
I know. Yeah. He's so greedy for these points, isn't he?
And then about half a point if it was Gasly, his teammate, or something. Yeah. Just, oh, okay.
That's how it works.
Okay, and...
Stroll out in Q1 for the 11th time in a row in his home race.
I mean, you've got a safe bet there as well.
Yeah,
it's not really...
After last time, I just went to bag some points.
Jess?
Bottas will out-qualify Hamilton.
I mean, run of form would suggest so. Yeah, okay.
And I was going to put one related to that, but I decided not to for fear of people coming for me with pitchforks. So I went for instead, Toro Rosso finishes better the rest.
Again,
we're doing good.
Solidly, could happen.
I'm after some points this time, guys. I'm actually doing predictions properly.
Yeah. And then
Mercedes will win.
Yeah.
Just go for really good stuff.
And then there's my predictions.
Which I love.
Ferrari will be the outright quickest car.
So how are we, because this is a very subjective one, a bit like Tommy's, it'll be the best race of the year so far.
How are we going to judge?
We'll just judge it. If at any point Leclerc or Vettel gets fastest lap, That's it.
Or if not, it's going to be quickest car through the speed track.
Then it's going to be anything.
Okay.
Through turn
I see what
six.
You're doing here.
You're basically saying, like, if we get another Bahrain kind of moment.
I think Ferrari will be good around Canada.
Yeah.
So,
hopefully.
With their engine modes,
hopefully they'll be able to pull it out on the old
slates.
Gasly out-qualifies Verstappen. Now, this was a banter prediction, but if it happens, I'm taking the full point. I'm taking 2 points if this happens.
Yeah, I give you 2 points if that.
I think Verstappen will have to hit it in the wall. So maybe if he hits it in the wall during qualifying, bang, done.
Bang, three points right there.
Fans, predictions. Mimi Dimin, huge carnage in first lap.
Huge carnage
in the office. Fire alarm.
That stopped very quickly.
The fire was put out very quickly. So huge carnage in the first lap. Okay. Very difficult to measure huge carnage, but we'll
I guess like Canada just had its fair share of like turn one carnage.
Incidents.
Yep.
So.
Genny Beans, the seagulls make a return. Just at any point we see a seagull in the sky, that's a point. And Nova _Puggy, Williams win the raft race.
I like that one.
Because they won it last year, didn't they?
No, it was McLaren.
McLaren that won last year.
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago, was it? It's when they had Honda engines because everyone was like, oh.
They won something. Like, yeah, I think we didn't. Yeah. Good bounce. William needs to win something this year, so.
Just a quick shout out to Paul Wallace, Supercars of London, his prediction, which hasn't been included, but we'll give him a shout out. Ferrari to accidentally book flights to Toronto for Leclerc.
That's a good one.
I like that. That's I like that. I like that a lot. Well, that's it. We're done.
Can we talk about Indy now?
Oh, God.
Fine, let's talk a little bit about Indy. Go.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Thanks for watching.
No, it was awesome. And
it was really good. Really good race.
Did you guys watch it?
I was at Speed Machine, but I watched maybe 75 laps or something.
Yeah.
I watched highlights. Yeah. And it was really good. Well,
yeah. Really exciting ending. If
Takuma Sato came out of nowhere. Yeah. Literally like
a
magician.
I don't know how he did it.
It was on those moments where I was like, Takuma Sato. Yeah.
He was a lap down as well. He's like 37, I think he is now or something.
No, he's 40-odd. He's 40-odd.
Yeah, 42. Yeah.
42, 43.
And if anything, like the fact that Alonso wasn't there, because let's be honest, if Alonso had qualified, he'd been trundling around at the back, yeah. And it maybe would have distracted at how good the race was, because people would just be like, oh, Alonso's not doing very well.
And the TV directors probably would have focused on
maybe.
Him running at the back.
But yeah, like instead, every year it delivers
an epic
finish.
It had that kind of like Baku, I guess for people that aren't used to watching IndyCar, it has that kind of like Baku level of anything can happen. Like people were coming into the pits and spinning or missing their pit box. I think, was it Davidson that missed his pit box? And tyres went flying and pit crew got run over. It was very much like, this is
more than ever, actually. Baku did actually pop into my head during the race, because more than ever, every safety car restart, they were just like going
all
like
over.
Six wide.
Yeah.
Like the slipstreaming was absolutely bonkers.
And I remember, I think I was saying this to you, Tommy, before we started recording, but Alonso came out saying that, you know, the thing about driving an Indy car is it's either on and you're glued to the racing line, or it's off and you're in the wall. Like there's no in between. And if it snaps, that's it. You're a passenger and you just go. And obviously I watched it and gone, yeah, fine, fair enough or whatever. But watching the race, you really got that sense, because all of a sudden a car will just go, see ya.
Yeah.
Like, and there's nothing you can do. You can't correct it. So it was in that sense, it's an absolutely bonkers spectacle to watch.
I think everyone that said, like, when Alonso qualified, was he fourth or something last year? Fourth or fifth?
Fifth.
2 years ago. And everyone was like, I think even Lewis Hamilton said, like, oh, it just shows the quality of IndyCar.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he hasn't qualified this year is maybe
at all,
people
yeah.
gone, oh, okay, this is quite a competitive
series.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's difficult to drive 230 miles an hour for an entire lap.
But I think not even just in the driver sense, but in the team sense, for me as well, is like there was a slight arrogance that McLaren had coming into this entire project. The fact that they only were entering into the Indy 500, which I know is not unusual. Like I know a lot of drivers and teams enter in as a one-off, but the idea that they could
throw a bunch
of money at it and think
and
that they could win was, you know, can you blame them? No, they're obviously very much wanting to give Fernando his triple crown.
That's the thing with Zach Brown saying that, like Zach Brown said, let's go win the triple crown. Their whole PR spin when they started it was, we're going to win the triple crown. It wasn't like, this is our first year, guys. Like,
let's keep
it steady. Like, if we get like a top 10, it's a really good result. Like,
let's go win. Yeah.
With a kind of brand new team, you know, and all the things about like I'm sure like everyone's seen it by now, like the paint being the wrong color and not converting it to the metric system when they put the setup on. Like,
how many of the top finishers were a Penske associated team?
Yeah, there's a lot. That's the thing. Penske, Andretti, who Alonso was with before.
Yeah.
Ed Carpenter. Like, these are the teams that they need to
be working
with.
They're seasoned and they know what they're doing. And I guess it's kind of testament to those guys that you have to have the experience to win in Indy. It's not just a series you can walk into. A little bit like Le Mans, I guess. It's like very much like people just think they can walk into a series and win, and they can't. And that's a good thing. And it also shows that for me, like, you know, how everyone's talking about like dominance, I guess. I don't know the ins and outs of IndyCar. I don't follow it very heavily throughout the season. But it'd be interested to know, like, do people care that Penske just wins everything?
Well, they don't. Like, it's you have like mixed results. Like Penske have won the Indy 500 a lot, but they didn't win it last year. no, they did win it last year, didn't win it the year before, didn't win it the year before. Like,
but I guess, like, do people care that Penske has its finger in every or in a select number of pies in terms of teams and drivers?
I think Indy is an issue. Indy is a lot closer because it's a spec series, but without going into a whole like kind of worms and everything,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, this is going to be a whole separate podcast.
Yeah, it's a spec series, but the cream rises to the top, and Penske, Andretti, and Ganassi.
Yeah,
forgot me. You know, they're still winning a lot of the races, but you do get other
the
teams
odd one
winning,
coming in.
And you know, yes, they're you know that they are the big team, but it's not the same as a Mercedes where they win every single race.
It's not a dominated sport as such. But
hey, we got a 1-3 from Mercedes Sunday, so we've got to be thankful.
Yeah, at least we didn't get our sixth 1-2 in a row. That would have been painful. Shout out to Joseph Newgarden as well. He was up there, wasn't he, in the Indy?
Yeah.
Four,
he looked gutted.
Yeah.
He was winning for a while, wasn't he?
He was gutted at the end.
He just fell off the back, didn't he? Yeah. He was just sitting there in fourth. But
it's one of those races that it means so much. It's more than the championship.
Yeah,
for a lot of IndyCar drivers.
Oh, yeah.
And they will flat out admit it.
IndyCar, like, champions, obviously it's a great achievement.
Yeah,
but
winning the
Indy
500 is like...
That's where you're remembered.
It's like Le Mans and WEC, right? Like winning the WC championship.
Or Monaco and F1.
No, it's not. No. Championship is the one. I will admit that.
Yeah, F1 championship over Monaco.
I was giving that to you, Tommy, but...
Yeah.
That's fine.
Even you. Amazing.
Even
right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, this has been going on for a long time.
17-hour podcast.
Just because the race was so good, like Monaco, you never know what to
keep it on the calendar for the next 500 years.
Still not convinced, but thank you for listening.
If you're still here, thank you. it's been a long one, but it's very warm in here as well. But we'll see you next time for the Canadian Grand Prix. Adios.
Bye. Adios? Do you not mean...
So,
au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. It wasn't meant to be tied in with Canada, but let's do it. Au revoir.
S'il
vous plaît. Oui. Bye.
Goodbye.
Well done.
Well done, Baku.
Well done, Montreal. Well
done, hasn't even
Toronto.
Happened yet. Well done, Monaco.
Yeah. Well done, Monaco.
Okay.
What a race.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.